So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup, Haha, Okay. I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be talking about Life After Lockup, episode 1 of 4. This week, Angela pisses on Tony's ring, Andrea breaks her vows to keep her kids out of the hood, Sarah gets a new boyfriend, Brittany gives birth, and Lacey tries to win back Shane because John is no longer an option. If you like what you hear, please support us by subscribing and leaving a 5-star rating, or any other constructive comments are welcome. And if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
How are things with you?
Things are going pretty well. Yeah. As much as they can be.
How is the air with the fires and whatnot? I heard the entire West Coast has unbreathable air.
Oh, I know. So I'm kind of by the beach, and so you can't tell too much because, you know, we get a good coastal breeze, but I have used it as my excuse for not working out right now. It's bad for my health.
Bad air? Yeah. That's what I was saying. It's like, is this an allergy cough, a smoke cough, or a coronavirus cough? Like,
Who knows? All right. Speaking of bad for your health.
It's bad for health is many of these stories. Let's start with, I'm going to start with Lacey, Shane, and John. Lacey, Shane, and Sean.
Yeah. Or Lacey, Sean.
Yeah, but Lacey, Sean. Just because she can't form a J sound with her lips anymore is what we assume?
No, I think she gets them legitimately mixed up, and it's just easier to refer to both of them as Sean because it's a mix of Shane and John. So it's now just Sean.
Just Sean. Yeah. Which gets really confusing when she's like, well, Sean left because Sean's in jail, and Sean like, what are you talking about,
it's
Lacey?
Like, who the hell is Sean? Oh, is it Shane or John? I don't know what you're talking about.
So this one picks up about 2 months after Shane moved out because, if you remember, because Daddy's home.
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy. Which is the last thing we saw from them. Lacey hasn't seen Shane since, and she's going to meet him. They have a really fake-sounding greeting when they meet at the boardwalk, and then they get us caught up. Shane has been living in some hotel while Lacey lives in the house with John. She tells Shane that since they are married – this is now at the meeting again. She tells Shane that since they're married and they made beautiful vows to each other, they should take some steps to live up to those vows. Shane, being confused and not so dumb as to miss this obvious question, says, "What about John?" Well, it turns out John is back in jail. We hear from John himself, his side of what happened. 3 weeks ago, which is about halfway through the 2 seasons, he got arrested following a fight between him and Lacey that started with a trip to the strip club together and ended with Lacey calling the cops. He feels like Lacey used him and set him up. Back at the boardwalk, Lacey is trying to get Shane back, and she tells him that she's changed her mind about John and honestly wants to be with Shane now. Shane is rightfully concerned that he's really just the backup man, and whenever John is available, she's gonna choose John. But at the end of the conversation, Shane agrees to start afresh. All right, is there any way? This is it. That's the end of her segment. I mean, he's right, yes. She's going to choose John as soon as he gets back out.
Yeah, I feel like this whole thing, like her dating Shane in the first place was just to piss off John, you know, because don't you remember they were fighting, her and John were fighting while he was in prison. And so she was like, hey, guess what? I'm going to find another prisoner. And so that was the whole reason why she ended up trying to hook up with Shane. I do think it's odd that they would have got married. Like, why did she take it that far? Unless she really needed to show John that, you know, she could leave him. But I don't know. I think her whole situation, like, John needs to make the decision not to go back. Because I just felt like how he ended up back in jail was super shady to begin with. Now, granted, he thinks that Lacey set him up. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that she necessarily set him up, but at the same time, you know, she can't set him up if he had drugs on him, because if you kind of they flashed like his papers or his arrest records, and so it looked like he was in possession.
Okay.
So I'm sure they had gone to the strip club. I'm sure he had drugs. And that's one of the things. It's like, I think Lacey knew that he was using again. Uh-huh. And so then, you know, if things were all hunky-dory between the two of them, I'm sure she wouldn't have called the cops on him. But it's like she used that against him because things weren't good with them. And I don't think that's right.
I mean, it depends. Okay. It depends on what happened when she called the cops, right?
Sure.
Because, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to find out that he was acting scary and violent. And she was like, I need to call the cops on this person, right? And he didn't see it that way. Like, nobody, very few abusers or people who are, you know, edging towards abuse or, you know, scaring the people they're with think that the person that is scared is justified in being scared. They're
sure.
Like, oh, they made something out of nothing. They didn't need to call the cops over that. That was nothing. I wasn't going to do anything, right?
Sure. And I absolutely agree with that. I guess my take on it was that I just get the impression that she knows he was using. I mean, why else would you go to the strip club with your girl? You know, it just seems like she's kind of – I'm not saying that she also is using, but it just seems like she knows full well what's going on. And so to me, it's kind of like you're enabling him.
Right.
And you're allowing this to happen. You're choosing to be in a relationship with someone who is actively using and you know. And I'm definitely making assumptions here that she knows. But so on the premise that she actually knows, like that to me is where I don't really think it's fair.
No. Like, and I totally get that, like, one of the conditions of them getting back together was you have to stop using. Right?
Sure. Was that ever explicitly said, though? I mean, she said it, but I don't think she ever said it to him. I think it was just implied that he was supposed to be sober because he's on parole, so he needs to be sober.
Right, but that's – okay, but that's her – that's right there, her whole issue is she uses the penal system of, you know, the state of Virginia to make her relationship decisions for him, for her, right? I don't have to force him to
yeah,
be sober.
Yeah, that's true.
Because parole forces him to be sober. I don't have to ask him to move out. I'll just have him arrested. Like, that's like...
I don't have to choose which one of the two men, whoever is not in jail, is to be my man.
Right. So, like, yes. State of Virginia Department of Corrections, you make all my relationship decisions for me.
Oh, gosh, which just seems like a terrible idea.
No, I mean, and it's fine. It's fine to break up with someone who is an addict who just will not stop using. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you need
yes.
to do it for your own sake. But it's not okay to, like... force the issue by having them arrested to make sure you don't backslide
yes.
that person.
Right. And I think that's what I have an issue with. And I'm not saying that John doesn't deserve to be in prison. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, mentally, like, what a betrayal that it's like your partner is the one who pretty much snitched on you and you ended up in prison because of that.
Right. And then just – I'm really – we talked about Shane is just so – like, he just jumped right back in this? What is that?
But at the same time, like, I don't feel bad for Shane at all. And I feel like, you know, highlighting Lacey's whole thing about how she was going back to John and all that, it's still, to me, like, Shane cheated on her.
Oh, that's true.
He is not a prize. He is not an angel. I kind of feel like two wrongs also don't make a right. Like, the two of them should just, like, move on.
They're not
my thought.
Good for each other.
No,
like, it's mutual.
Like,
they're
well,
mutually
you both
not good for
each
other.
Other.
Right.
Yeah. And I know that Lacey would defend her cheating, saying it's like, oh, it was like retaliation. It was like out of revenge. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like you two just shouldn't be together then.
I feel like if in your relationship you're concerned about revenge, we're already in a terrible place that we
right.
probably shouldn't be in this relationship anymore.
Okay. Speaking of stupid Shane, what on earth was with his look in the interview?
In the interviews. How?
I was like,
so I'm always confused
happening?
About how much later the interview is because
yeah.
that giant stupid goatee. It wasn't
oh
even a beard.
God.
He had his side shaved. It was just... It just came out of his chin and came out like a foot. It was, oh my God. It was
and
hideous.
And it was like shaped, almost like, you know, like a box shape.
Like he was trying
to
look
trim
like.
Trim a hedge or something.
Yeah, like it was, yes, it was like a topiary on his chin. Exactly.
Okay, plus he still has the same dumb haircut. And what? Did it look like he, like, was on the wrong end of a spray tan. I was like, why is his face so orange?
That could be, too. That could be, too. Like, the haircut, too. It's just...
His haircut's so dumb.
It's so bad. I mean, there's a lot of bad haircuts on these shows, but that one's just like... I don't know if he chose that. No, I don't think he chooses that. I just think he needs a better barber.
It's a choice. It's okay. It's very much like the Dumb and Dumber haircut.
Yeah, it's, you know, like
Jim Carrey,
it's
Dumb and Dumber.
It's like a mixture between a bowl cut, like your Dumb and Dumber, but yeah, also like the Caesar, right? You know, the Caesar thing people did in the 90s where they grew their front hair a little bit longer and combed it down. It was like front instead of a comb over. Right. But it's like both. Yeah. I mean, it really just looks bad because the front looks bad. The front just kind of comes down and is straight across. Like, and that's just the sign of a bad barber to me.
Oh, God. Yeah. Lacey needs a new man.
All right.
Let's move on. So speaking of a new man, let's talk Angela and Tony. So we open on Angela, who is smoking per usual, and she flicks her cigarette butt into the toilet, where it makes good company with her wedding ring, which Angela tells us later is tied to a string hanging in her toilet so she can piss on it every day. Classy. So she walks out of her house to talk to her friend Faye, who has brought over some groceries. They maintain social distance since we're told the pandemic is happening, and Angela tells us that she's feeling even more alone, depressed, bored, and isolated since Tony is gone. Angela tells Faye that it's been 4 months since she's talked to Tony. Faye fears that, you know, Angela is emotional and vulnerable, which leaves the door wide open for Tony weaseling his way back into her life. Faye thinks that if this global outbreak is what's keeping Tony away, then she says, go Corona. Angela tells us that she is missing the intimacy of a relationship, not just the sex, but being able to talk to someone. So she is considering finding another partner on a prison pen pal site. She wants to find someone who is in prison and locked down, and Faye reminds her that that's why she's having problems in the first place. Tony tells us that he has been quarantining at a seedy-ass motel, and life without Angela has been terrible. So he randomly shows up at her house with a carton of cigarettes as a peace offering for her. You know, because who needs flowers when you can't smoke them? He's convinced that Angela will forgive him if he can just get in some FaceTime, but he knows she's a pushover and it doesn't really matter what he does. He thinks that if he can just smile or touch her, it's in the bag. Angela comes out of the shed with a bat in hand and a cigarette in the other. They stand about 6 feet apart as Angela yells at him about how he's an awful partner and human being, and Tony has nothing more to say other than, but, I love you. Angela goes on to say that she doesn't know why he's there, and he thinks that she's just gonna forgive him. She says all this as she's just like expressively waving the bat around, and Tony backs up afraid he's going to get hit. So finally he tells her just to chill with the bat, man. Okay, so predictions. We've seen it happen before. Tony has good reason to believe that he can get into Angela's good graces. Do you think Angela will forgive Tony at least long enough for some sexy time?
Probably.
God.
Yeah, I've seen it before. Like, there's too many times where he's done too much.
Yes.
That it's been,
and it's
like,
how do you forgive?
And he always. And the thing is she never, like, I feel like she never completely forgives him, but still takes him back.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. She forgives, kind of, but she doesn't forget. And
right.
She's constantly holding it over his head, all of these indiscretions.
Which he resents, which makes him act out again. Which then the whole cycle starts over again, right?
Right. And what I don't get is Angela is one of the more educated people on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And educated in a way where it's like she should know, like she does like mental health therapy or something like that.
Right.
You would think that this would be the kind of person who studied psychology, that like has studied kind of human behavior, that she would be able to like – identify these crazy cycles and like be able to identify that this isn't healthy. And so it just confuses me how she keeps on choosing these things.
It is. And like, and it kind of was the same thing when she said she was thinking about getting another prison pen pal,
this
right?
This is not the answer.
Right. Because, and it's like, fine. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, it's it's an action that you have to be careful with because you have to consider why you want to do it, right?
Yes.
And like, I'm not saying it's always the wrong choice for everybody in all circumstances, right?
Sure.
But in her circumstance, when it's like, it seems like what she wants is she wants to have a person that she never has to deal with, but is still like her person. And whatever it is that she's trying to get out of it, that situation is temporary because they get out of prison eventually.
Yes, right? And then become a Tony, essentially.
And then become a Tony. Like, she liked Tony a lot better when he was just like...
trapped in prison.
Trapped in prison. And, you know, and why do you want to have somebody that you keep... So it's like, it's definitely, you'd think she'd have a little more self-awareness to be like, what is it about this prison pen pal thing that appeals to me so much? And like, what are the traps that come with that?
Well, I think the thing is, for this particular situation, is she is really still hung up on Tony. As much as she's still angry about it, she is still very hung up on him. And I think it's, I see myself doing something similar. It's like almost like you're trying to find a replacement for that person.
Oh, sure.
You know? And so I can very easily see her saying, okay, well, basically I just want a replacement Tony in my life. Mm-hmm. So Tony was in prison, so I'm going to just find someone else in prison, you know?
Sure.
Like, I can see myself if, you know, like, I dated a football player, someone who's really into football, and, like, I'm really devastated about that. It's kind of like, okay, well, I want to date someone else who's really into football, too, you know? And it's just, mm-hmm. like, this weird subconscious thing where it's, like, you're basically just trying to replace the person that you lost. Sure. And so I can see her doing something like that because, but I do agree with you that she is looking for that kind of person who's like isolated themselves. And so they really only have each other. And so a guy in prison does seem like the ideal, but I do also think she's motivated by kind of replacing Tony.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, what she wants is there's a lot of things she likes about Tony, right? Clearly. And she was like, maybe if I try this again, I don't
know. Can we identify what exact, he's got a dumb face. Like,
uh-huh.
I don't get it. He's not particularly smart.
No, but he's got – I think she's a sucker for like his puppy dog eyes and his neediness, right? I think she's
she thinks he's hot, I guess. Oh,
I do think she thinks he's attractive. Like, definitely. Yeah. She definitely does, right?
I don't get
but it's
it.
Also like there's a weird like I like the guy who needs me around and needs my help for stuff. Like there's some of that. I mean – we've seen enough. He's kind of funny, right?
No.
He's funny.
I don't think so at all. I think he's really dumb.
Yeah, but it's a dumb person humor. Like the way he says chill with the bat is funny. Like he says dumb things in a funny way.
That's not my sense of humor. I think like I'm more into wit.
Sure. Oh, it's not wit. Know? No, it's definitely not wit.
Yeah, and like that guy isn't going to be witty ever because that guy's too dumb to be witty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wit requires some amount of intelligence. But yeah, I guess I could see him being kind of the slapstick, obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Guy. And it also seems like he probably has a good sense of humor.
Definitely.
You know, like keeping it light, but I don't get it. I'm confused.
All right. Let's switch gears and go to the
– be confused about someone else.
Yeah, no, these ones I'm not confused about. This is the one okay. The one couple that is not confusing to me, and that's Marcelino and Brittany.
Yeah, I love them.
Right. So Brittany is in the hospital in labor. She's been in labor since last night, and things are about to get started. It's also Brittany's mother, Cindy's birthday, and Marcelino is relieved because he didn't get her anything, so now he doesn't have to. We're reminded that Cindy wasn't the best mom, and that's an understatement. And Marcelino is happy she's around, but hopes she can at least, you know, be productive and sober around the family. Then as things go on, the birth of the baby is imminent, and Marcelino starts to get visibly nervous looking for a doctor. But soon, all the medical practitioners come in, and then Marcelino fills the whole thing on his phone in vertical orientation. And the baby is born without any issues that we can see. Marcelino tells us how joyful the experience was for him. And then a couple hours later, when Brittany has had a chance to put herself together, she tells us that the baby's name is Marciano. And then Marcelino brings the other kids in to meet him. That's going to be very confusing all year round.
It is. I know. know. I was going to say, I love that name. And it's not that I don't like it. I really like Marciano. I think it's a really cool name. Uh-huh. I'm not really super huge fan of the name Marcelino. But Marciano, like, I'm into it. But yes, that's going to be super confusing. Yeah, it's going to be
very confusing. But I think it seemed like she was like my little baby Mars. So I don't know if they're going to call him Mars most of the time. That would make it.
Well, she kind of calls Marcelino Mars, too. Yeah. It's going to be like Big Mars, Little Mars. But I guess what do you do when you have like Junior?
Right. But it's not a Junior. That's why it's weirdly confusing, is it's really close, but not a Junior.
Right. But even then, what do you do in a Junior situation, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of JRs. There's a lot of Juniors. There's a lot of little. Well, and there's a lot of like, you know, Dad's name is Bill. Right? Dad goes by Bill, and so if his son goes by like Will. The
younger one goes by William. Yeah. But what do you do in a situation like John? How many variations of John can you have?
There's John. There's Johnny, but that's usually Jonathan. And,
sure.
Also Jack. Jack is short for John.
That makes no sense to me. Jack is Jack. Okay. How do you get Jack from
Jack is
John?
A nickname for John. Like, But it is, though.
All right. I've yet to meet someone who goes by Jack that was a John.
My grandfather.
Okay. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm just saying I have not come across them. So.
All right. Anyway, I have. The babies come in and then – oh, that's it. Marcelino counts his blessings about building his family out of the mess they both came up in. So –
it was super emotional. Like, really, like, felt for both of them. Like, felt a lot of love for both of them. Mm-hmm. And, like, a lot of hope. And, like, this is by far the most successful couple on this show.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. But it's the one couple that we've seen on this show where, like, the driving force for getting clean and the driving force for, you know, making things better is – it really has to come – internally from both of them, really, but definitely from the person who comes out. Usually it's the person who comes out is just like, whatever, and the other person is like, we're gonna fix everything, and it's like, it doesn't work. It doesn't work if somebody else wants to fix everything. You have to want to fix everything too.
And I feel like Brittany, I think the fact that she had kids before, mm-hmm. Her losing her kids,
sure.
I think that really affected her. Like, she's definitely been family oriented, like, from day one. I think that that is what makes her so likable. Mm-hmm. I also think what's really makes her likable for me is that, you know, I feel really inspired by her whole, like, you know, really trying, second chance. Like, good for you, Brittany. She went back to school and she's getting A's on everything.
Sure.
You know, like those kinds of things where it's like she's really trying to better herself. She's really like keeping on the straight and narrow. And I know Marcelino, like that was one thing that kind of like rubbed me the wrong way about him at the beginning, was that he almost seemed like militant. Like, I can help her stay on this straight and narrow path. You know, like, I will beat her into submission and, you know, like, she will not go back to prison if I'm around. But it really, he hasn't had to do any of that. No. She has managed herself.
Yeah. And I mean, and which makes it a lot easier. But also, like, Marcelino's, like, real drive to be, like, you know, to be the father of the child that's not his. And be like, no, I'm this kid's dad now. Like, that's end of story. I'm all in on that. So it's all about that all in. Both of them, everybody has to be all in on everything working in order for everything to work. And that's like, that's outside of his show too. That's in just life.
Yeah. So I think like both of them just seem really family oriented. And it's like, okay. And not to say that things are always going to go well for them, because we've seen that things have not gone well for them in terms of like money and things like that.
Sure.
But it's like their values and their intentions at the end of the day are really good. It was kind of funny to me how Marcelino, he seemed especially excited for this one because it was a boy.
It was a boy.
The only thing that I was kind of like, Marcelino, come on now.
Yeah, I'm always, a little leery of that. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. He's like, every man should experience having a son. It's like, all right. Like, all right. All sure, right. Whatever you say.
Right. Yeah, that's a little much in this time of like, you know, trans rights and everything, to be like, my son is my son. Like, chill out, dude. Like,
right. And this also, this whole birth made me also remember that babies are so weird looking.
They really are.
Like, right when, you know, she gave birth compared to, like, 2 hours later.
Oh, and absolutely.
It's like, oh, totally. 2 hours later. So adorable. Right when she gave birth, I was like, ah, what is that thing?
It's their growths are all covered in, like, gook so and slime. Looking, and, like, right? They're just screaming and people are manhandling it. Like, that's the thing, too, is you're like, oh, all this gentleness. They pull it out and they're like, they just, like, grab it and, like, chuck it onto the mom's chest. Like, here, like, oh, it's all arms are all splayed out and stuff like that. Aww. It's like, oh.
They're also, like, kind of still purple and, like, oh, yeah, I don't definitely. Know, like, a yeah. weird color. And you're yep. just kind of like, ugh. So.
Well, that one didn't have. Sometimes they come out with a cone head.
Oh, fun. Ugh, no thanks. All right, moving on to Sarah and Michael. Apparently, what was her name? Megan.
Megan.
Megan is nowhere to be seen so far.
Yeah, no title card for Megan. Nope.
No, she has no real connection to Michael anymore, I guess. So Michael is at Maria's house. That's the new girlfriend, and has locked himself in the bathroom so he can call Sarah. She immediately asks if he's just calling to talk to the girls, and if so, they're not with her at the moment. Maria then knocks on the bathroom door, demanding to know what Michael is doing, so he tells her he's taking a shower as he turns on the water. Sarah asks him where he is, and Michael tells her not to worry about his location. Michael then tells us that ever since the hotel fight, he hasn't talked to Sarah much, and he's been shacking up with Maria in Miami. He tells us that Maria has been really jealous of Sarah, and she's been acting crazy. Sarah and Michael talk about Rain's first birthday. Michael beats around the bush asking questions about the cake, and Sarah just calls him out on his bullshit, saying that he really should be asking about the logistics so he could be there. Michael claims that he wants to be there and wouldn't miss it, but Sarah's just making it so difficult. Michael then says he will be there for a few days and he will take the girls for a weekend by himself. And Sarah says no, that she doesn't trust him. And he will have to be consistent with them before she will trust him enough to let him take the girls by herself. She tells us that part of the holdup with the divorce is agreeing to a child custody or agreement to child custody. So as of now, they are still legally married. Michael tries to compromise by saying he will stay at her house, but Sarah puts the kibosh on that because she doesn't want any accidental sexy time like the last time he stayed over. She tells him that he can be there and see them as much as he wants, but Maria is not welcome, which confuses and annoys Michael. He feels like she is trying to keep him away from the kids. We find out that Sarah is dating someone new who she says treats her with respect, cares, and treats her very well. His name is Malcolm, and he lives 4 hours away. He's also a single dad, and he's met the girls, and they both like him. Sarah says that she gets to see him a couple of days a week. She meets with him at a bar where they have a low-key date. He says he's just enjoying her company, that they are exclusive, moving towards being more exclusive, and he's excited about the future. They talk about Rain's birthday that weekend, and Sarah invites him to the party. Malcolm looks hesitant and asks if it's too soon. As soon as she says no, he says he would love to go. Sarah warns him that Michael may be there, and Malcolm thinks that this could be a sticky situation. Malcolm is concerned that Michael may try to fight him, and he just doesn't want any confrontation. He feels a lot of pressure having to be confronted and to be the bigger man. Sarah suggests that they meet before the party to prevent any party drama, and Malcolm agrees that that's a good idea. Malcolm then makes some random comment about Sarah in red panties. Ugh. All right. What kind of vibes do you get from Malcolm? Do you think he's in it for the long haul?
I liked Malcolm. Like, it's tricky to say in it for the long haul because that's that 4 hour thing. And, you know, he has kids and she has kids. So we're assuming the kids live 4 hours away.
Sure.
That's a tricky thing. So long haul, I don't know. But he doesn't seem like I wouldn't say in it for the wrong reasons necessarily.
Right.
Like he just likes hanging out with her, and having fun. Like he's not, he doesn't seem like a huge asshole like Michael. But you know, I said I liked him, and you know that's the kiss of death on this show. As soon as you say I kind of like this person, the next show you're like, oh, they're hot garbage. Right.
Oh right, right. Yeah, they took a hard left into garbage town. Yeah. So my kind of take on Malcolm is I do think he's a nice guy. I think he's got good intentions, but there were red flags to me. So one of the things was when he was talking about, where they are in the relationship, because I'm sure production asked, like, so what's going on with you and Sarah? So he starts it off with like, oh, we're just enjoying each other's company. Like, and, you know, we're exclusive, moving towards being more exclusive. And that right there was just like hesitation, you know? And sure. To me, it's just like when I hear that hesitation, it just like, it like, I feel so bad because it's just like that hesitation, I think, means more than what they kind of let on that it really means.
Uh-huh. I mean, so, yeah, it did kind of seem like he was like, well, I like having sex with her.
Yes.
And, but we'll kind of see if there's going to be a relationship. And this works for now, yeah.
And he's like, okay, and to me, when people kind of say exclusive versus being in a relationship, this is how I interpret it. And this might just be a me thing. But like exclusive is like, well, I feel like sometimes it's really easy to be exclusive with someone else because you just don't need to have sex with anyone else, right?
Right, right. I'm not actively trying to have sex with other people right now. Yeah.
And given your situation, that might be super easy for you to like not have sex with someone else, right?
If right.
People aren't clamoring to have sex with you, right? So to me, like exclusive is very passive because it's like you want the benefits of being in a relationship and the minimum amount that is expected from you is that you don't sleep with anyone else.
Right.
Right. But you're not actually like in the relationship. Like you're not being that supportive partner. You're not someone that they can necessarily depend on, you know, like, and to me, it's kind of like you're just taking pieces of the relationship that you want. And just because it's convenient, easy, you know, like not a big deal for you to not sleep with someone else. Like that's right. Why to me, that's the biggest difference between exclusive versus like being in a relationship.
Right. But then I would go on the flip side. Is Sarah in it for the long haul? Like this relationship? Is this really a relationship she wants? And I would say no. Right. Okay. I say there is one thing she wants out of this relationship, and that is to make Michael jealous.
Yes and no. I think that that is definitely something she's going to take advantage of because she knows he'll get jealous and she'll know it bothers him. But I also really think Sarah just has deep down, she really wants to move on. Like I think she doesn't get or she wishes that she had more control over kind of like cutting Michael off in her mind. Mm-hmm. But she just can't. She just can't let this guy go. And so I do think there is a part of her, like you said, that wants to make him jealous because she somehow thinks that, you know, Michael will like try to win her back. I do think there is some kind of fantasy side that she's like thinking and envisioning that. But I also think that it's like, well, for her, worst case scenario, like this is someone I can move on with.
I don't know because it really bothered me. And I get where they're coming from if you want to analyze it, you know, farther down. I give Sarah a less of a benefit of the doubt because like we saw her in two scenes. In the first scene, she said, don't bring your new girlfriend around the girls.
Yeah.
And in the next scene, she was like, I'm going to invite my boyfriend to this party. Like, so it seems like she's putting this double standard on where she's isolating Michael by himself and then coming and showing her new boyfriend in front of him. Like it just seemed like the whole situation was just engineered around making Michael angry. Right.
Maybe, sure.
Maybe not even jealous. Not like she's hope he's going to come back to her or I don't know what her hope is, but she really looked like she wanted to piss him off.
Yeah, when you say it like that, absolutely, I agree with you. But I wonder if it would be different if she hadn't had like an altercation with Maria, right?
Sure.
Because I think that's also part of it is that, you know, like she don't like this girl. They don't like each other, right? But let's say, for example, Michael started dating someone new and it was kind of more clean slate. And, you know, Sarah isn't in a place where she's going to be jealous over this girl because, I mean, quite honestly, like Maria could have been an angel. Sarah wasn't going to like her. She wasn't in kind of a mental space where she was over Michael enough to really get on board with him dating someone else. Now that Sarah has a boyfriend, if Michael somehow had a new girlfriend, maybe she would be a little bit more open to, you know, not hating her right off the bat. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't – okay, but let's put it this way. Is there any chance Michael could have any girlfriend where she wouldn't be like, well, I have to meet her before she comes and meets the girls?
No, because he has terrible taste in women.
Okay, but did she offer the same to him when she had a boyfriend? Do you want to meet this guy before interviews? No. So I get where Michael's coming from. And yes, objectively, Michael has been a worse father than she has been a mother, right? He doesn't seem all that invested until being invested is going to piss off Sarah, right?
Right. Or benefit him in some way.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's almost like I feel like part of being a good ex and a good like co-parent is the offer. Listen, especially if you're going to go for the custody. Listen, mm-hmm. I offered him. I played my half the same way I asked him to play his half and he didn't do it, you know? And because he might go, well, yeah, whatever. I don't care. Right? She'd be like, oh, I'm offering you the chance. Do you want to meet this guy before introducing the girls? Michael would have been like, whatever. I don't care. Right?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have said, oh, yes, I want to meet this fellow that you're dating and thinking about introducing my girls. But, you know, I definitely think she's playing her half of the parenting relationship. And she's holding Michael to a different standard, which isn't necessarily wrong. But like when you look at it from the way like a court is going to look at it when they're doing the custody battle, it's going to look bad.
Yeah, but will they see it as being bad? Because Michael has a record. You know, and it's like one of those things where it's like, I say that because I feel like, you know, like, and he hasn't made the best decisions.
Oh, no. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, when it's like, when you have a record, you have drugs in the past, right? The type of record that's going to impact the child's life, right?
Sure.
That like, where if you went back to those crimes, but also he moved to Miami.
Yeah.
Like that's going to lose you almost like every time. Like, sorry, you moved away.
Oh, goodness. All right. Last couple.
So, Andrea and Lamar. As a result of the family vote from last season, the family has moved to L.A., more specifically Watts, which Andrea describes as, quote, one of the poorest and most dangerous neighborhoods in L.A. Lamar really loves California, and he thinks that after the coronavirus quarantine, he'll have Andrea eating out of his hands because L.A. is so awesome. Andrea feels like right now she's basically living in the hood and thinks they need to find some money to get a safer place that she can live so she can actually feel safe in California. They're fighting over how to install a closet organizer, and Andrea, after she hears sirens, says that she's failed her children because they have to share a closet and live in the ghetto, which again, her words. Then Lamar gets to work on building this closet organizer and almost immediately calls on the 18-year-old Tennyson to read the instructions. Nyla has a talk with Andrea in the car about not hyper-focusing on the negative. Andrea had run away in the car to have some alone time, I guess. Before Andrea says a prayer really loud about finding her purpose in California. In the commercial interlude, Andrea tells us her favorite part about L.A., the fruit carts. She calls them part of the culture of California.
All right.
And then Lamar tells us he doesn't get the appeal of Utah, which he says only has mountains, snow, scary-ass churches, and terrible Italian food. In the next scene, Andrea and Lamar going to Priscilla's private dance lesson. While Priscilla is working on her ballet lessons, Andrea brings up the environment that they're in again. She's particularly worried about her children's spiritual growth, which means she wants Priscilla to get baptized. Lamar disagrees with that completely, and according to the church, she cannot get baptized without Lamar's consent. Lamar says that his argument is he doesn't want Priscilla to be raised with blind faith and wants her to make her own decisions, but he pretty quickly gives away the game and says he just doesn't want her to be Mormon. They get into another argument over the church, and it seems like Lamar's biggest issues with the church are the racial demographics of the church. In an interview, Andrea tells us that Priscilla's baptism and her Mormon upbringing is a deal breaker for her in the marriage. So let's talk about this. Don't you feel like a deal breaker of this magnitude ought to be something that you're not keeping a secret from the other person?
Yeah, probably keeping your deal breakers a secret is not the way to go. But I feel like she's just being super dramatic because it's like, to me, like having your husband not be Mormon would be equally as much of a deal breaker. So it just, like, why is it okay that your husband isn't Mormon, but then, like, your kids can't be Mormon, or, like, your kids have to be Mormon, too? So I don't know. Maybe she feels more of a responsibility towards her kids. But to me, it's kind of like, if you wanted to avoid this to begin with, you should have married a Mormon person.
Right. Totally. And I mean, there's so much I don't get about Andrea's specific flavor of faith. Right?
Right. It, yeah. With her, because I kind of feel like she was trying to recruit someone into the Mormon faith, and that's how she was going to find someone. And it just seems to me like, okay, sure, I'm not saying you can't do that. People convert all the time for their partners. But shouldn't you have waited for him to actually convert before you decided that that was going to be your partner, if that was your strategy?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and okay, the part that bothered me was like her reasoning behind everything. Right. And I don't know enough about the Mormon church to know if this is part of the teachings or if something this is just Andrea's making up on her own. Right. Uh-huh. Because I get when people are like, listen, I want my children to, you know, what's morally right. I want to know them what God commands. I want them to understand the things. And that's why I want them to be brought up in the church. But she's basically like, if she doesn't get baptized, Jesus won't protect her. I need Jesus to protect her in this dangerous neighborhood. Like she needs to get the Jesus superpower. Like, is what she seems to be saying. Like, I need my kids to have Jesus watching them when they need the Jesus bubble. Like, and I don't know that that's really a part of the dogma, or if that's something she's just bringing out on her own.
I don't know. I quite honestly, like, I always thought that the baptism was comparable to, like, communion, right? So, like, your first communion, and it's about the same age. Right? You start going to classes like around that time, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit – at least Catholic, we do First Communion around when they're like eight, second grade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So I kind of took it to mean something like that, right? Where you're old enough to make that decision for yourself.
Right.
And like make that, you know, choice. And so I don't think it's the baptism itself that is what's going to save Priscilla. I think it's – Priscilla making a choice to be baptized that is supposed to be saving Priscilla. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that kind of confuses me about like this whole conversation is like, why are they not talking about it with Priscilla? Like it is, it's supposed to be at an, this isn't like, you know, the christening or, you know, where it's like, you don't get a choice. Babies are just going to get like christened and baptized and like they're just there, you know. It's like they're supposed to be old enough to decide if this is what they want, and they're talking about it like Priscilla doesn't have any kind of choice in the matter. And so I just kind of feel like, why aren't they having this conversation with her? Because to me, like if I was Lamar and I was in a position where I was like, okay, I don't have this same faith and my child, you know, my partner really wants our child to be baptized in this faith, it would be like, well, what does she want? Because if she wants that, like, why am I going to be the one who says, no, you can't be Mormon?
Right. And that's what it was up because, I don't know, it's such a kind of a joke to me to pretend like, what is she, five? Like five, six, even seven or eight is actually making any decision by themselves, right?
No, I think she is eight.
Okay, but even eight. I'll give you eight, all right? Eight. She's eight. Like, eight-year-olds do what their parents tell them to do. They don't have enough capability to actually fully understand what it is, what decision they're making. Like, my kids did First Communion. She didn't, like, say, like, oh, this is something I've decided. It was just like, we're putting you in First Communion classes. And it's like, that was it, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea of an eight-year-old has all, like, they have marginally more agency than a child, right?
But right.
Because if her dad's like, hey, I don't really believe in this. And her mom's like, I'm divorcing your dad if you don't do this. Well, nah, that choice was made for her. Right?
Right.
And so
– well, I mean, I feel like you can ask her and then she can decide. And okay, and granted, I absolutely 100% see it going down like this. Like Priscilla's looking at mom all like being forceful about it. And she's like, okay, I'll do it.
Right.
You know, and even if Lamar says, you know, like, you don't have to if you don't want to, it's your decision. Like, I support you if you don't. She's going to go with mom because mom Andrea just needs her own way, right? And she definitely treats the kids like that. Mm-hmm. So I can absolutely see her going along with it just because Andrea wants that to happen. At the same time, like, I don't see what the problem is.
Yeah, I mean, so I think part of the issue is on Lamar's side too, right? Because you had mentioned mm-hmm. if you're Andrea, why would you marry a non-Mormon?
Yes.
If you're Lamar and you think this lowly of the Mormon church, and he mm-hmm. thinks very lowly of the Mormon church.
Yeah. Why'd you marry a Mormon woman?
Yeah.
Sure.
Especially a very devout Mormon woman, right? Yes. Andrea's not
or
messing
at least
around with
trying
it.
To seem at least like she is, at least.
Outwardly very devout. Yes.
Yes.
And so it's like this wasn't a problem on either of their ends. It's going to go away.
Right. Right. No, that's true. And I guess I forget that Lamar also equally chooses Andrea, and he's choosing, you know, to marry a Mormon or stay married to a Mormon. So this is part of it, you know, having to raise a child. And I mean, there's going to get to be a point, like maybe it starts off this way where Priscilla is baptized. Priscilla is, you know, going to Mormon church and whatever Mormon school, and then at Sunday school. And then at some point, she is going to make the decision on her own, you know? And I think that's, like, fair enough. And like I said, I don't think there's anything wrong with her being baptized, like, at a young age and then letting her kind of, like, continue on with the teachings and then make a decision later on, like, if she's going to choose to continue to follow it.
Well, yeah, like, a lot of religions have, like, that kind of like entry level like commitment.
Yes.
And then when you're like a teenager, there's like a higher commitment that you're like, oh, well, now sure. you really are making your own decision about wanting to be a part of this.
Right, right. So, I mean, like, I don't see what the problem is. I don't think necessarily Lamar should say anything, but I mean, like, stop it. I think he should be able to say something, but I don't think he should be actively trying to stop it. I do think they need to have this conversation with Priscilla instead of fighting about it. She doesn't have a say.
If she says no, it's still a fight. If she says, I don't want to get baptized, I'd rather wait. Like, that's still a fight. Her mom's not going to accept that.
Well, we can also talk about that. Andrea's the worst person. I cannot stand this lady. Because it's like, she is such a control freak and she has to have her way. And I just think like, okay, you had this vote because that was your way of compromising and it didn't go down the way you wanted. So she's just going to like mope around and have this awful, awful attitude the entire time, talking about how this is like such a shitty thing. Like, and she's being super dramatic. She's trying to be manipulative. Like, you know, I vowed that my kids would never live in the – vowed to who?
Right.
You know, like – and why does that matter? And she's just so dramatic. And
I failed my children. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it just really bothers me that she has this shit attitude. And it was so funny to me that Nyla and her are having that conversation in the car. And Nyla's like, you know, honestly, it's not going to be good unless you have a positive outlook. And she totally calls her out on it, right?
Uh-huh.
And then Andrea's like, well, who taught you to have that? Like, you know, it's like, oh my God, you're such a hypocrite. This is like my biggest thing with Andrea. She's like the biggest hypocrite.
Right.
And it's just like, just she needs to check her attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and she doesn't even seem to like go with how – understand how like insulting it is to Lamar. Like,
oh God, yes.
You know, just to be like, this is the thing that no person, my children should never experience, is living like you do. Like –
yeah.
That yay? Like, what do you want me to – especially, like, overreaction. But and I'm not saying Watts is a great neighborhood that I would want to live in.
Okay, but I feel like they're not helping their situation out. Did you see? They have folding chairs as their furniture. Like, come on. Like, you couldn't move some of your Utah furniture over? Like,
right.
I was very
That's
confused
true.
By that all
that. That is true. Like, didn't they – they had the house in Utah. Did they not sell it? I feel like part of that is they didn't sell the house. Or I don't know. I don't know property values. Maybe they sold the house in Utah and they got like, you know, I always look at Zillow and like places in the country I don't live. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, giant McMansions. And I look at the prices like 120. What are you talking about?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But I just feel like let's maybe enrich our lives with something other than folding chairs.
Right. And yeah, Walmart. Closet organizers that we
God. Well, that might be necessary.
But you're right. But it's like where are folding chairs? Where was all the furniture they had in Utah? Like, so
right.
It's a good question. All right.
Yeah. Okay, so that pretty much covers, and we have three more episodes of this, but what about your student of the week?
I mean, I guess you have to go with Marcelino. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, being supportive. He did what you're supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do when you're the dad, right? Nothing out of – I mean, except for, like, I'm not a huge fan of filming everything. That's not my issue. It was like God. She's there doing all the work. I got my camera up over your head. Like, you look terrible, but – you know, other than that.
I think he was trying to be respectful of angles.
He was trying.
He didn't want to be in the splash zone. You know what I'm saying?
But that's it. That's okay. So when, you know, when I was in that room, right, I was holding up a leg. Like that was my job. Oh, like the nurses at the bottom hold up a leg. So I was like, I feel like it was at least my duty to be like, at least my hands are full. I don't have another hand to film this. Like I'm doing something productive, right?
Why? Okay, completely separate. Why is it that people hold things? Didn't it used to be you had stirrups? What happened to the stirrup days?
Yeah, so
did that like go out of style or something?
It did. The stirrups, like my understanding is that because they hold your legs in that in a one position and they don't like let you move around as much, it led to a lot more damage being done, like when the baby came out, right? And so
interesting.
And so, like, they definitely went to, like, supporting and, like, but when you support their leg, if they want to, like, pull their leg up farther or swing their leg out or swing their leg in, like, that, it can still move. Where, like,
it seems like, you know, a couple brain trusts can come together and come up with some kind of solution to that.
I mean, a lot of it comes down to, because back in, like, the 50s and 60s, they used to do, like, they called it twilight sleep. Where they would like give people like anesthesia till they were almost under.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And sure. Have them push and stuff. Like, and so I feel like ever since then there's been like a slow movement. Like I feel like that was the most medical birth ever became. And there's been like a slower movement towards if you're gonna give birth like naturally, right?
Should be naturally, sure.
As naturally as possible, right? And now, granted, there's still problems with, you know, there's still issues with the number of C-sections that get done and stuff like that. But, but like, if you're going to give birth naturally, they tend to try to be like, well, you know, they hold people's legs before.
I'm just saying, it doesn't seem like that complicated of a solution. And I don't know, maybe you should get your best people on that.
All right, who's your student of the week?
My student of the week was actually Brittany. Like, come on, the lady just gave birth. Like, this is her fifth kid. But I think this episode really made me kind of look back and think about how far she's really come, you know? And there have been like some things where it's just like, all right, maybe she didn't handle that super well, like her whole thing with Sasha, you know, whatever. But it's just like, you know, she has been a good partner. She has been like really communicative. She's trying to heal herself from past traumas. She's trying to forgive her mom for the things that she's gone through. It's like she's gone through a lot. And I'm like, I am personally very proud of where she is today.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you did something. Yes. We watched you through all this. All right. What class about dunces. I went with Lacey.
Oh, I did too.
Oh, man. She clearly has a number one and a number two.
Yeah.
Right? And she's just like, number one annoyed me. Number two, it's your turn.
Right.
Like, and she's going to do it again later. Yeah. Tag team. Right.
Yeah. Tag team. Yeah. To me, it seemed pretty obvious that she's in a predicament of her own actions.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, yeah, well, you know, you really did bring this particular situation on yourself. And I feel like that's why both of them, Shane and John, just need to move on, you know? It's like she's just going to continue playing both of them.
Right. And it seems unfair to me. She's brought this whole situation on for herself, but whatever. She always has a guy.
Yeah.
Like she has what she wants. That's fine with her. Yeah.
Quite honestly, like this is how I see it going down. Like let's say John stays in prison, you know, and Lacey really does like cut him off. Like, she's just going to find a new John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so, and she's going to keep the house. I mean, she was living in the house with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they bought together, but, you know, he didn't have any actual money. But it was especially their house that she just lived with another dude in it. And then he just came right back. Ugh.
Yeah. Okay. What about your life lesson?
All right. So this one goes to both Andrea and Lamar, right?
Uh-huh.
and you can't more toward Lamar in this episode. I feel like it was Andrea last season. Mm-hmm. You can't assume that just because someplace is comfortable for you, that it is automatically going to be comfortable for everybody else too, right? Even sure. people that you love, right? She's, I don't think, ever going to be fully comfortable in California. And he's just like, no. whatever, as soon as the quarantine's over, she'll see how friggin' awesome California is. I feel like she has a taste of California and she knows it pretty well enough that she knows it's not for her.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like she definitely was getting a taste of what Lamar felt in Utah, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is that they're not empathetic enough to realize that. Right?
Right.
To realize that this is how the other person is feeling. They're like just so self-absorbed. They just focus on what they're
right.
feeling.
Right. And so, and like, that's what Lamar, the whole time, he was so self-absorbed that he thought about Utah and he was like, how could I know impossible to love Utah? Nobody really loves Utah.
Yeah. Right.
And he's like, no, people actually do really love Utah. Like I promise you, there's not as many as love LA maybe, but the people who stay in Utah for a long time, they really like it.
Oh yeah, sure. Absolutely. All right, so my life lesson also inspired by Andrea and Lamar. So if you make a compromise or concede in a relationship, you need to accept the terms. Because being a sore loser or just complaining all the time isn't doing anyone any good. And it's just bringing everyone down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, ugh, yeah. So we'll get more of them next week, I'm sure.
Oh, God, I know, right? Okay, so that wraps up this episode. And so we will be back next week with the episode 2 of 4 of Life After Lockup.
That's right. We'll see everybody then.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.